the High Road. Jason Isbell in the 400 unit from the Nashville Sound right here on 90.3 KNBA. It was the surf rock or beach rock band, Repeat, Repeat. How can they be a surf rock or a beach rock band if they're from Nashville? There's no surf in Nashville. Anyway, Repeat, Repeat with Girlfriend from their brand new album, their second album, Floral Canyon. It was the Cars, of course, with Candy O back there. 10,000 Maniacs, a deep track, A Cherry Tree. And we started with brand new music from Josh Ritter from his album Gathering with Feels Like Lightning. It's 8:25. It is the Morning Line program right here on 90.3 KNBA. I'm Danny Preston.
And I'm Frank Chithlick. KNBA knows that our listeners want to hear about stuff happening in our community. So we've got this events and arts calendar, as well as great guests in the studio to talk about what they're doing in our community. One of the things I see on the schedule is there's the 907 Bikes and Chain Reaction are hosting this, that's a bicycle group, hosting this.
I thought it was like a rock band.
I know, it sounds really like, yeah. But it's called the Frosty Bottom. It's an annual winter endurance event held entirely on the multi-use trails in Anchorage. Full course and a one-of-a-kind urban fat bike racing experience. The event's this coming January, January 13th. And the registration information is at Chain Reaction Cycles. Alaska Wilderness League, this coming Thursday at 6:30, is at the Church of Love in Spinard Church of Love, and it's the Alaska Wilderness League hosting an event of holiday entertainment showcasing films, arts, and performances celebrating the beauty and importance of Alaska, kind of like celebrating being outside by being inside watching this film. It's a free, family-friendly event hosted by the Alaska Wilderness League and Trustees for Alaska and Defenders of Wildlife. That's Thursday at 6:30.
Okay, thanks very much, Frank. It is it's 8:26. A couple of fine guests to welcome to the program this morning. Two contemporary Alaska Native artists. First, we will welcome Athabascan and Paiute member Melissa Shaganoff. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
And we have Denina Athabascan, Joel Isaac. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning.
So, So this is interesting here. We're billing you as contemporary artists, but we're here to talk about traditional stuff and how that gets woven together. The program is called Materials Tradition, and we'll see how we weave the contemporary artists into that. And it's not really weaving we're talking about today, but rather moose hide tanning and sewing in the Diné way. And it's going to be an exhibition, a presentation, a project at the Anchorage Museum that we're totally stoked to be going to. So, Joel, let's start out. Tell us a little bit about just sort of an overview about what's going to be happening at the museum, what folks are going to see.
So this week we're doing an artist residency, and we're working on making different projects. I'm working on making a Dena'ina tunic out of brain tan smoked moose hide. And this is really part of a series that the Anchorage Museum with the Smithsonian Arctic Studies Center has been doing for the past few years. And they've done salmon skin residencies, quill working residencies, gut ivory, and now we're doing a moose hide residency. And it's been really valuable for my, personally for me, for my contemporary practice by learning these traditional ways of working in order to incorporate them into contemporary contexts.
Now, you actually did a thesis or a dissertation with sewing?
I did undergraduate research in skin working methods, and that's where I studied and figured out how to work with salmon skin. And I did that in my senior year, final year at UAF back in 2012, and then participated in the residency on fish skin working at the Arctic Studies Center back in 2012.
Okay. Unlike somebody that just goes and takes art classes and learns how to paint or how to sculpt, there's not really an institution, I don't think, that like that that teaches moose hide tanning and sewing. How does a fellow in the 21st century get involved in the first place?
I think a big part of it is just asking people. So and reading. Because there's a lot of literature that's been produced on it. So I started out by reading books, and I did half of my undergrad studying chemistry. So I looked at industrial leather tanning methods and indigenous leather tanning methods and ethnographies and anthropological papers and things like that. And then I was talking with Melissa's aunt, And she's like, you should talk to Helen Dick. Because I was like, do you know anyone who knows how to do this? And Helen is the elder that I work with now almost every day. And we were at art camp. Sondra got a roadkill moose. And 2 hours before all the parents came to pick up the teens, we butchered a moose. And that's when I started learning how to do moose hide tanning.
And the rest, as they say, is history. And lots of history still to come. Melissa, how did you get started in this?
So I'm fairly new to moose hide tanning. I'm still learning this. This last year is when I really took on kind of this endeavor. And it really is an endeavor because, like Joel said, it takes a lot of research and a lot of kind of looking into your own history and personal story as to, you know, why it is that you don't know or don't understand this sort of very important tradition, you know, in our cultures, in both Anna and Dena'ina. So this last year, I started asking around, asking questions and finding out who was doing things. And I always knew about Joel. We had actually worked together as art teachers at art camp.
Wow.
In like late high school or early college days, and didn't really know each other that much. But we started working together and working on projects like this, where we're bringing community together and really exposing them to what it's like to do this whole process, you know, from the roadkill, from the scraping, to the smoking, to the brain tanning. And so it's been kind of a long journey. I mean, learning just my own personal history as to why, you know, in Chickaloon, my village, we don't do this practice anymore. And talking to elders, you know, we hear these stories of our elders, you know, being arrested and you know, being taken into custody if they were hunting moose or if they were working on hides. So it became this sort of colonized practice to hide your hides, to bury them, to put them in the river, to get rid of them. And, you know, I realized that actually my great-grandfather was, you know, put in jail for 6 months for shooting a moose out of season. And, you know, that history is all embedded in our family's history. And when you learn those stories, it teaches you a little bit about yourself. And you know, that's, for me, it was first an endeavor to inform my work with Indigenous materials, and then it became really a kind of a personal story.
How important, you know, within that context, and that being said, how important is it for you personally to be able to be involved in making sure that a great history and tradition that had to be hidden away for so long, how important is it to you to know that you're going to be passing that on for the next generation and the next generation?
Well, I think in our contemporary lives, it's difficult to do that. You know, it's difficult to find a way to make this an important, this long process and this kind of difficult process to learn how to make it a priority in your lives. And I think that, you know, the Smithsonian Arctic Studies Center, they've organized this project, and it's really about documenting the whole process so we can distribute this information to anybody who's interested. So when someone like Joel or myself goes knocking on doors, here you go. Here's a step-by-step guide on how two people learned how to do this.
Fantastic. It's 8:33. If you're just joining us, it is Morning Line on KMBA, and we have artists Melissa Shaganoff and Joel Isaac in the studio with us this morning. And we're talking about an exhibition, a project, actually, that's being presented at the Anchorage Museum. And it is, let me make sure I get the times out here, tomorrow and Friday from 1 to 3 at the Anchorage Museum in the Arctic Studies exhibit. And then you guys are going to do presentations at 1:30 and 2:30 both days. Is that right, Joel?
Correct. So there's a video that is on the Quillwork residency. It's pretty short. It's like a couple minutes long, just to kind of talk about quillwork, because quillworking and hide working go hand in hand, because the quillworking is applied to the leather that is made. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and then the overall project, what's been happening, a little bit about the design work that goes into the various projects that we're making, a little bit of the technology that's used, a little bit about thread. So the thread that we're, some of the thread that we're using is made from moose backstrap sinew. So it's the tendon off of a moose and just showing... It's
your thread.
That's the thread. Yeah. So it's like, where did thread come before there was cotton and polyester and nylon and all these different things?
It wasn't like Kmart.
Right. Yeah. You had to get everything that you need to tan a moose and make clothing comes from the moose. So you have the skin, one skin from a moose, you have the brain, the amount of brain that comes from the moose is enough to tan it. And then you have the thread coming from the tendons, and then you have the needles coming from the bones of a moose. So really everything you need to make an entire set of clothing for an adult comes with one full-sized moose.
Everything in one package.
One package.
Yeah, that's tremendous. So if you had to put it in a nutshell, I guess, and I'll throw this out to either one of you, how about the overarching purpose of the project? How come?
Well, I mean, I would say that it's really community. You know, it's about working with other people who are doing this work. It's about working with someone like Joel that I can learn from, working with my Aunt Sandra Shaganoff-Stewart, who's been teaching me, and working with, you know, elders like Helen Dick, you know, and bringing in people. I did a project at Elders and Youth this year where we just scraped a moose hide for 2 days, and we stunk up the entire Dana Center. But it was great because we had over like 300 kids come in and touch a moose hide.
What sort of response did you get from the kids?
It was wonderful. A lot of them was like, this stinks. But, you know, there was more than a handful that were there and getting in there without gloves, without any, you know, worried about smelling or anything and really getting in there. And a lot of kids, too, are saying that, you know, this reminds you of home. And I think that, you know, doing these projects like this where people are exposed to this kind of work, it brings up other things. And Joel and I have both been engaged in, you know, in language work, you know, and it teaches you about the language and about the materials and tools that you use. You know, you talk about the word for the skin scraper, which is the nagige, which means it looks like teeth. And then it tells you about what that material looked like. So you can recreate it or you can try to find a way. So it's almost like this reverse engineering. So it just opens doors to a lot of different knowledges that you don't really understand.
Just a couple more minutes, we'll get wrapped up here. But I want to look at one more thing here. Joel, Melissa used the term, I think twice, a sense of community. How important is that infusion of that sense of community in what you do with the moose hides?
I think it's huge, and that's really, moose hide it's a lot of work. And when we started out, Don contacted me and was like, would you be interested in working on a hide project with the Arctic Smithsonian Study Center? And I was like, I don't have time right now. Like, I know how much time it takes to do moose and how much time it takes to do documenting. And she asked a few times, and then it was like, I have to do this. Like, because there are so many people that ask about it. And teaching one person at a time is a way to go, but you can't reach the number of people who want to know. And it is a valuable opportunity to build the community between the museum, the Smithsonian Arctic Study Center, the Seary Foundation, who has been funding these projects. And it's like it reaches a very broad audience, partnering between Chickaloon and Kenaitse and Melissa and myself and Sandra and Helen. So we're bringing and Melissa's family and the kids at Yanida'a and AFN, and like this has become quite a big interaction of people. And doing a moose hide is a tremendous amount of work. We've been working on this for 3 months, and it usually, if I were just to do it by myself, it takes like a month long process to do, plus 3 months of aging. So it's by nature, the material requires a couple people at least. I can do it by myself, but it takes a lot out of me. And so it as a material, it's inherent that it has that community aspect. And it's something like when you see it, it's large. The frame for stretching it out is like 12 by 14 feet. So we were softening the moose hide in the Wellness Center in Kenai, in the lobby of the Dena'ina Wellness Center. And it fills up half the space, and it's like a 20-foot ceiling. And so you walk in and like, oh my goodness, what's that? What's that smell? And it engages a lot of people. And it allows for a lot of the hard conversations, like, why don't we do this anymore? To happen. And I think the other thing that it does is it bridges some of the gaps that happens between our urban and rural populations of like, oh, people in the village do that. And for those of us in the road systems, like, no, we we are here. We're not invisible people, as the phrase goes. And this is something that is still part of our lives today. And we have to figure out how to do it when we're in the middle of a city. And it is possible.
Tremendous.
And it's something that I think brings those people who are fortunate and that they can live in the village and do traditional life ways when they can go outside their door and they're in the middle of the land. It bridges that gap between people who had to come to the city for whatever reason, that they don't have to forsake that relationship to the land. They can, there's still a way to do this in an urban center like Anchorage. I think that's, that community relationship is beyond just our own smaller communities. It's a statewide issue, and it helps kind of show people how that's possible. And that's why that's again one more reason why I was like, I have to do this. And Helen charged me with, you need to show people how to do this. When she showed me, it's like, you need to show other people how to do this. So this seemed a natural fit to document the process. And then it's affecting our language communities, because we're going to be able to have this really well-made video documentation and then be able to dub it in Dene'ina and then Otna as well. So it can be done in English and our target languages.
That's one heck of a locus for motivation,
yeah.
Right there. Good. It's such a, I don't even know if most lay people, you know, recognize what a grand endeavor it is. It's not like, okay, I'm going home after work and doing a moose hide tonight. That it takes all this time, this effort, and multiple people and all. It's 8:41. I guess we better get wrapped up here, Joel, as we get set to close. Anything else to add?
I just want to say thanks to the Siri Foundation. They were a major sponsor for doing this project, and I think it really shows what they care about for partnering with the Smithsonian Arctic Studies Center to make this happen.
Okay. Thanks very much for joining us on Morning Line. Melissa, last word.
I just want to thank our teachers. Thank Helen Dick. Thank Sandra. And, thank Don Bittison from the Arctic Studies Center, because without this funding and this project, without them, we wouldn't be here.
Moosehide Tanning and Sewing in the Dene Way tomorrow and Friday at the Anchorage Museum in the Arctic Studies Center, 1 to 3 p.m. both days. Artist presentations, 1:30 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. both days. Melissa Shaganoff and Joel Isaac, thanks ever so much for joining us today on Morning Line.
Chicken at Kwa.
Chinen.
And just ahead, Big Brother and Holding Company and Mondo Cosmo on KMBA.
The American Indian Movement, the Alcatraz Island occupation, the Wounded Knee takeover, the Longest Walk. These are some of the notable events that propelled Native American issues onto the national stage during a critical time. The late Ojibwe activist Dennis Banks is closely associated with all of them. We'll remember him on the next Native America Calling.
Native America Calling is heard weekday mornings at 9 on KMBA, Alaska's Native Voice.